This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I think that voice came to Tim Schwartz because he was going back through time to see the origins of the crystal skulls. Now, for those who follow pop culture, it's interesting here where crystal skulls or any kind of crystalline thing is brought to bear. Like, if you look at the Superman legend, Krypton used these little crystals. So, for example, when he throws the crystalline object he got from his spaceship into the ground in the far north, it builds his Fortress of Solitude.
I remember watching that at the cinema.
That was in the Superman the movie.
It was indeed.
It was also repeated in the TV show Superman and Lois.
I prefer the movie original. Good old Christopher Reeve. I remember that.
Well, the guy who's playing him now, Tyler Hoechlin on the Superman and Lois TV show, he's really good because, second to Christopher Reeve, he captures the dorky nature of Clark Kent.
Excellent. Excellent.
But he doesn't go over the top like Reeve. I think some of the stuff in the Christopher Reeve movies, not because of him, but because they were making comic book movies, were just way over the top and not very realistic. Especially now, if we look at like the first 10, 15 minutes of Superman 3. It plays like a stupid comedy movie. Anyway, let's get back to skulls. That's more sensible.
Okay. It's interesting because I could say a bit more about the crystal side of things, the silicate side of things. Because the more I kind of plowed into that context of the book, I discovered that, we're carbon life forms living in a silicon world. Silicon's in absolutely everything. You know, it's in windows, it's in the computer in terms of microchips, it's in sand, it's in our buildings, you know, it's in quartz, it's in flint, it's absolutely everywhere. There's just tons and tons of silica. It does appear to have been something that solidified out of a liquid. So maybe when the world was made, it was one of the principal building blocks right at the very beginning. It just doesn't form complex molecular chains in the same way that carbon does. So as a life form, we were able to become more complex. But we are essentially living in a silicon world. And I thought, well, how does that relate to us as human beings? So I started looking at, you know, what does silica do for us? You know, is there any silica in the human body? The interesting thing I found, and this is why I say there's some connections in the book, they're sort of little wow moments. The connection I found is that when a baby is developing, if there's a deficiency of silica, the baby is affected in the area of the brain. So the brain doesn't form properly if there's no silica. And I thought, well, that's amazing, because that means we need the silica. We need, if you like, the liquid form of quartz, the chemical form of quartz. We need that to develop our brains. So that would explain why they chose to make crystal skulls, because it's the carrier for the brain. But the question then that's running through my mind is, how on earth did they know? How on earth did they find that out, you know, back in prehistoric times? Absolutely incredible. I'll give you another little ooh moment based around silica as well. For a long time, they've been modelling the planet's core, the Earth's core, to try and find out what's going on there. And most of the time, they've tried iron and metal-based cores and things like that. And there's a thing called Olsen's paradox, which means when you model the planet, if it doesn't work, then you've fallen into Olsen's paradox, because it doesn't work, it's not functioning. It turns out that the solution to Olsen's paradox is if you make the Earth's core quartz silica, then everything works. The gravity works, the magnetic field works, the electrical fields work, everything works. And more specifically, they think it could very well be amethyst, which is a very chemically specific form of quartz silica. And it solves the paradox. So we are quite literally spinning through space on a crystal ball. That's what we are. We are a crystal world, a crystal planet, if you like. Absolutely incredible. Again, how did they know? How did they understand that something like that was a priority in the world in which we live? You know, they seem to have elevated quartz crystal and elevated that whole silica thing to that level. You know, it's only recently we discovered that the electrical discharge that you get from quartz, that's what's in wristwatches. If you pressurise quartz, then it pushes back with a pulse. And it's got so many qualities to it. You can photograph it on Curlian photography. You can see the energy, the power, the electrical field coming out of it. And it is almost like a living crystal. I think it was Tesla actually said that the crystals are essentially a living thing, you know, very much in the way that the planet is a living thing. So I kind of touch on that. It's getting really deep. It's getting really complicated. And, you know, that's kind of where the book leaves things open, if you like, for people to push further into that. But that's where I'd be interested perhaps in the future to hear what people think about where that takes us. But there is that underlying spiritual dimension to the book, which is still there to be explored further, I think.
I know there have been some researchers who have mapped out the Earth's, you know, like magnetic lines and ley lines in an attempt to see if the Earth is actually a giant crystal. And, you know, some of the indications seem to show that at least in its early formative years, you know, that may have been the case.
There's a lot of legends around the world that the planet itself came out of some form of fluid where it's solidified. There's a lot of the Egyptians had this bed of reeds rising up out of the water and producing dry land and becoming solid. There's the biblical idea that, you know, the planet was without form and void, and then all of a sudden out of the fluid we get all the solids and we get everything happening. And it seems to be that a lot of the people that go and examine planets beyond this world and look at things that are forming, it seems to be a process, almost like things solidify from liquid into solid, which again points in the direction of the Earth solidifying as a form of a crystal. And as I said, when you computer model it as quartz, as amethyst, then it works. It's one of the only things you can put in there that will actually make it a functioning planet. So it's not just a theory now, it's starting to be accepted as science.
I was going to let you have the chance to ask your question, Gene, sorry.
No, go ahead, Tim.
Going back to the idea that you had where they are now using like crystal discs to hold information. I mean, I remember, especially back in the 70s and early 80s when the Mitchell Hedges skull was really getting a lot of attention, that there were several psychics who examined it. And, you know, and of course, I mean, you know, there are people who believe or disbelieve in, you know, psychic abilities. But most of them came away with the impression that the skull was actually holding a vast amount of information, but they could only get, you know, like flashes of it.
It's there is an element of science behind that, because I go into detail in the book about how we are essentially, as individual human beings, very much a reflection of all that we find in the world around us, which we have in common with quartz, with crystal, with silica. We have that sort of embodiment, if you like, of different properties. So if we as electrical humans, as electrical human beings, picked up an enormous lump of quartz, which is again in itself an electrical generator, if we're sensitive enough, we should be able to feel something.
I can feel a break coming on right now.
Yeah.
It will disappear for a few minutes, perhaps. Except for listeners of the Paracast Plus. With Mark, Gene, and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
According to the World Gold Council, while demand for gold is surging, 72% of people reply they lack the necessary know-how to do so. Hi, my name's Adam Barada, owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest-rated gold dealer in the country. The reason? We lead with education. We've taught millions of investors how to buy gold safely and securely, and our in-depth gold guide explains everything you need to know. From what type of metals to consider, if an IRA or cash transaction is best, and how you can be certain that the gold you're buying is authentic, certified, and real. Call 800-900-8000 now and get our number one rated first-time gold buyer's kit. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the information you need to secure your future. Call 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000 today.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now, using crystals and stuff for so many properties, it brings to mind a guy named Richard Shaver. Ever hear of him, Mark?
Yeah, I do. I recognize that name.
And he had something called rock books.
Yes.
And I assume the rocks had some kind of quartz crystal in them.
almost every rock on planet Earth will have some silica quality of some kind. It's just the quantity dictates how crystalline the end result is.
With his rock book system, you had to use a special array of lenses and such to be able to see something. Mm-hmm. And we did see the pictures that he sent us. And, you know, we look, and this is a giant Rorschach test, right? You'll see whatever you think you can see. Then again, we started looking at it, and after a while, we being me in Geneva, we started looking at this, and after a while, we started to see things. Now, maybe it was our imagination. This is, what, 50 years ago? But it is something important that everyone's going to the same spectrum here.
Yeah.
It all begins with quartz.
Yes, oh, totally, without any doubt at all. That's the mystical history of glass. It's almost like for tens of thousands of years, in the past, people knew and they appreciated, respected and understood the part that quartz, silica played in day-to-day existence. But then as we have pulled away, if you like, from the natural world and the natural environment through industrialization and the Industrial Revolution over the last 200 or 300 years, we've lost it. As a writer, I'm frequently stumbling across stuff in the past that we just seem to have completely missed. We lost the meaning of the green man. We've lost the meaning of a lot of the biblical stuff and the stuff from Babylon and all different parts of the world. And a lot of the Chinese mystical stuff has started to disappear. And quartz silica, it's just vanished. You know, we don't know what to do with stone circles or how they work. You know, one day, hopefully, somebody somewhere will find that strange missing, you know, library that's hidden in Egypt somewhere. And, you know, the record, as I call them, the Akashic records, but that just annoys me. Because physically, we just need to find what happened to the information that was in that library at Alexandria. I think it would blow our minds. It would absolutely dynamite our world to know what was known back then and what was lost. That we're now struggling with, you know?
Well, there were legends that we had an advanced civilization.
Yes.
Many, many thousands of years ago. Of course, that gets back to the Shaver. I remember Lemuria, but Atlantis, Lemuria. That some cataclysm caused the end of these civilizations. And you look at that today, and imagine that what we have today was destroyed somehow, and, you know, we're getting close. Maybe we can do that. We destroy everything. If you came by 5,000 years from now from another planet to look at Earth, or 10,000 or more, how much would you see of our civilization?
Well, going back to silicon microchips, you know, one gigantic solar flare lasts for 24 hours so that the world rotates, and a lot of what we've got that we now refer to as data would just simply be destroyed. We'd just lose stuff overnight. I mean, with things like, it's James Churchwood is the most famous guy for Lemuria, and when he put his books out and challenged the overall Atlantis theme, I mean, said, well, you know, Atlantis is not the only one, there's probably been several. Everybody sort of went, ah, well, you know, yeah, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't happen. Now there's a slightly different view, because people who are into geology are looking at this layer now of comet and meteorite debris that seems to have basically taken out the dinosaurs. That's a massive impact. And then when we've now got Google Earth through the joys of satellite, we suddenly realize the entire of the Gulf of Mexico is an impact crater. So everyone's like, wow, something did hit the Earth, and it did wipe a lot of stuff out. So while we're still reeling from the shock of that, then, you know, the Antarctic Geological Survey comes back, having scanned all the ice down there, and they say, hey, you think that crater's big? You want to see the size of the one that's under Antarctica? Apparently that's even bigger. It's an enormous impact crater. So you've got two really big catastrophic events there that have happened way, way, way back in the past that could very easily have taken down Atlantis, Lemuria, and others, you know, Lyonesse, whatever, all these different lands could have all been submerged. And then go back even further, you've got dinosaurs, they've gone, you know, species gone. Plants, animals, people, gone. Things turned to stone. We're just beginning to understand and appreciate the mechanisms that cause that, which is why at the end of the title I put, you know, this sit line, and the end of the world. You know, nothing lasts forever, nothing's immortal. So the book also challenges us, if you like, to look into the eyes of the skulls and face death. everything has an end, and that's not a bad thing. That's the way the world's wired. You know, that is nature. That is the world in which we live in. And we're never going to switch the genetic clock off, I don't think, to the extent that we're going to live forever. That's never going to happen, because things just wear out. You know, sooner or later, you're going to wear out. You might buy extra time, but you're still going to wear out. Yeah, interesting. So going back to the sunken lands and Atlantis and all that, we have lost so much stuff in the past. I think there's probably still hints of it out there, because like I say, I stumble across things like that on a fairly regular basis, looking at the past. Yeah, and there's quite a lot of it, more I think than people think.
For example, what else is out there that maybe we don't suspect as being a relic of this sort?
Well, I don't even know where to start with that. There's a couple of archaeological sites that appear to be nuclear blasts, where the desert sand and the villages or whatever have been turned to glass, and there are skeletons of people in poses that would indicate they were blasted flat to the floor. We've got things like the Antikythera mechanism, which has now been decoded and x-rayed, found on a Greek shipwreck from about sort of 250 AD, and it turns out to be a supercomputer that calculates the movements of the stars and planets absolutely perfectly for centuries in either direction. Nobody even knows where that came from. There is a precedent for it in some of the Greek designers and philosophers, but wow, what an amazing object. And then you've got a whole string of ooparts. You know, you've got gold chains, cooking pots and skulls found in coal. You know, you've got there's a hammer that's been found embedded in rock that's tens of thousands of years old. Every so often we come up with bits of vases and screw threads and all sorts of crazy wacky stuff that ooparts is what the archaeologists call it, and it just turns up where you really don't expect it to turn up. The past must have been fantastically diverse. They must have known what they were doing. You know, did the Egyptians have aeroplanes and light bulbs? And, you know, there's the Baghdad battery that generates electricity. And, you know, what the heck are pyramids for? And, you know, how did they move the blocks? You know, halfway up Baalbek, there's a 300-ton block, you know, just kind of sat there in the middle of a wall. How on earth did that get up there? You know, how was he moving these things? These are all technological and scientific questions that at the moment we actually don't have the answer for.
Part of it also is the ego involved of a scientist. How can somebody who lived 20,000 years ago, whatever it is, be as advanced or more advanced than we were? That's not possible.
We're
number one numeral uno in terms of scientific advancement.
That was my reason at the start of the book for, to some extent, salvaging the fallout, if you like, from the theory of evolution.
We've got Mark and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
The president from Poland trying to rally global support for Ukraine.
We stand with you. Period.
In a speech that lasted about a half hour, the president blasted his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. He says the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine caused some other things to happen that Putin did not expect.
Rather than breaking Ukrainian resolve, Russia's brutal tactics have strengthened the resolve.
Rather than driving NATO apart, the West is now stronger and more united than it has ever been.
Russia not conquering Ukraine as swiftly as Putin expected. It's signaling a change in strategy, but the Biden administration says they are going to watch what the Kremlin does as opposed to what they say. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban seeking his country's neutrality in the war in Ukraine, causing frustration and outrage instead, including from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is USA Radio News. The U.S. called for tougher sanctions on North Korea after Pyongyang test-fired its biggest intercontinental ballistic missile to date. Kim Jong-un vowed to expand his country's, quote, nuclear war deterrent while preparing for what it called a long-standing confrontation with the United States. At a U.N. Security Council meeting Friday, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said the U.S. would propose a resolution to update and strengthen sanctions. Members of Canada's indigenous population and the Vatican are set to meet next week. The Assembly of First Nations expecting a public apology from the Vatican after last year's discovery in British Columbia of about 200 unmarked and previously undocumented graves of children at what was Canada's largest indigenous residential school. More than 150,000 indigenous children were forced to attend government-funded Christian schools from the 19th century through the 1970s. Chinese authorities say none of the 132 people aboard a China Eastern flight that crashed last week survived. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
They're obviously, based on what you're saying, Mark Olley, author of Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, artifacts out there that we're not readily recognizing as evidence of this one or more past civilizations. So?
Yes, there are quite a lot of them. If you only accept the idea that things are getting better, so that's evolving, so, you know, if we're moving forward, then you would be inclined to think that advanced technology from the past and advanced knowledge from the past perhaps didn't exist or wasn't what we were seeing it as. On the other hand, the book proposes devolution, which is the natural process of things happening and then decaying, which we see on a small scale, but it also appears to be happening on a bigger scale over time. That would make perfect sense. You know, when the Library at Alexandria was burnt, I mean, it was burnt three times by three successive different invaders. When that was burnt, we lost a lot of information. But that's what happens in nature. Things do devolve. Very rarely does anything actually move into something of its higher form. We think we're advancing, and yes, we are constantly fighting against the decay that we find in everything, and we do occasionally make advancements. You know, we've done a tremendous amount at the end of the Industrial Revolution, which is where we are now. We're into the scientific age. But at the same time, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, there's an awful lot of stuff in the past that even with all our technology and our science and everything else, we just can't explain. You know, there's no easy way to just write it off, you know. And again, I think we were going to perhaps recap a little bit on the Paracas, the guys with the enormous skulls. If these guys are walking around with skulls that are three times the capacity of our heads, that means they have brains that are three times the capacity of our brains. What on earth could these guys do? You know, get a dozen of those guys in a room, and they're all walking supercomputers. yes, they're going to see the world in a completely different way, and they're going to make decisions that are not like our decisions, but the capacity for what they could do would be enormous. You know, we'd just look like hamsters. You know, we'd look like guinea pigs in comparison to what they were capable of doing. But they're not with us anymore. You know, they're gone. So when you look at it that way, perhaps in prehistory, with those kind of guys wandering around, you know, some of the things we see as impossible were not quite so impossible. You know, the book does make that as a point. It does say that when you start to appreciate what humans were capable of back then, some of these mysteries are not as mysterious. We still don't know how they did it or how they worked things out. But, you know, we're getting there. I think we're getting there. We just have to get rid of this idea that everything is getting better, because it just isn't. You know, we need to, like you say, get rid of the ego, get rid of the pride, and start taking evidence on face value and running with it, beginning to, you know, it's a new 21st century way of doing things. You know, let's just have a look at it and see what we can do with it.
Speaking of the Paracas skulls, now, the skeptics say that there's nothing unusual about them, that they've just been boarded. I can't, there's another term that goes in front of it.
Cradle boarding.
Cradle boarded, right, right, yeah. to flatten and elongate the skulls. However, there's a lot more skull there, you know, with those guys than with a normal human skull.
I think in the book I'm the first person to actually nail down the fact that there are two. There are definitely two forms of elongated crania. There's definitely the natural form, the genetic form, GEC I call it, genetically elongated crania. And then there's actually humans trying to copy that, which is the, if you like, the cradle-boarded version, the stretched version. We know that the actual natural genetic larger crania are impossible to reproduce. Very often the bones at the top of the skull are all one. There's no cracks or sutures in there. The little hole at the bottom of the skull, I'm going to try and avoid technical language here, is further back and smaller in the larger heads, and that has to be genetic. And there's lots of other little clues in there as well. I mean, we have some of the genetic material from some of the natural Paracas, and it DNA-wise, it's not the same as us. They are a definite, distinct, different species. And then also there are newborn babies in some of the cemeteries of very, very recently been born with giant heads. You know, the heads are there from the beginning. There's no way that there would have been any time at all. You can't cradle board a baby in the womb to make the head bigger. And things like that really just, you know, they blow the idea that they're all, you know, artificially done completely out of the water. They are a distinct species. But that doesn't rule out the fact that they must have had qualities people wanted to copy. Somebody wanted to increase the size of ordinary crania to enable those people to be able to do whatever it was or be whatever they were that these guys with the big heads were. They had some qualities there that we really wanted to copy. I mean, it still goes on today, unofficially, in South America. They are still cradle boarding. I would love to do an investigation into what happens when you know, triple the size of the human brain and which bits get bigger. And I hint at it in the book, and I try and sort of, you know, make some sense out of it. But that, again, is another area that really would warrant serious investigation. You know, the scientific community does need to turn its eyes towards the Paracas and have a look at what that means for us. What that would mean for them as a race and for us now as human beings. You know, what was it we lost with the Paracas and others?
Well, obviously cases of so-called alien abduction involved occasionally creatures with large heads and very spindly bodies. So isn't that following the same kind of concept?
Well, yes, it is. I think, again, one of the lesser trod roads, if you like, lesser considered theories, is that if people were so advanced in the past, hypothetically perhaps more advanced than us, maybe at some point, you know, one of these guys with a brain that's, you know, capable of doing the work of three Einsteins all joined together, you know, one of these guys probably had the capacity to crack time and space. And what I'm looking at when I'm looking at things like aliens, abductions, the identity of the creatures that are there in these ships that are appearing all the time, the sort of one theory that ticks all the boxes for me is the idea that they have somehow managed to crack time as a problem. They're not limited by time. Time is something that a lot of the abductees say doesn't seem to exist. You know, there's a lot of confusion over time and lost time when things happen, when people have contact with these alien beings. So I'm coming around to the opinion that perhaps they are versions, variations, species of us, either from the past, that have cracked time travel from the past, or from our future, and they've cracked time travel there. And for them, you know, past, present and future doesn't really exist. For them, it's not linear time, which is what we experience. For them, they can sort of jump around, which would neatly explain why what we're seeing is something that does, to some extent, resemble perhaps how the Paracas looked and other species. And yet, at the same time, all these other phenomena, the technology, the problems with time, what they're up to, you know, that kind of fits that theory too. Possibly they're coming here to not so much to see what's going on in terms of how what we're doing now affects them. I think maybe they're coming here now to see where planet Earth has ended up. I'm more inclined to think that they're from some time in the distant past, and they're coming forward in their time to see where the planet eventually finishes up. So again, that's another hint with the you know, the end of the world slip in there in the subtitle of the book. Maybe they are actually coming to our time now in increasingly greater numbers, because something is going to happen at some point. And they just want to see what that something is going to be. They want to see where we end up.
Well, hopefully we end up in a position where we are still here a few years from now to talk about it. But then all the sci-fi tropes about the early 21st century and some kind of Armageddon type deal. Mm. I have some other ideas I want to bring to your attention, Mark, and get your reaction to it. Our next segment with Gene and Mark and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
According to the World Gold Council, while demand for gold is surging, 72% of people reply they lack the necessary know-how to do so. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta, owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest-rated gold dealer in the country. The reason? We lead with education. We've taught millions of investors how to buy gold safely and securely, and our in-depth gold guide explains everything you need to know. From what type of metals to consider, if an IRA or cash transaction is best, and how you can be certain that the gold you're buying is authentic, certified, and real. Call 800-900-8000 now and get our number one rated first-time gold buyer's kit. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the information you need to secure your future. Call 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000 today.
Stock market have you nervous? With geopolitical conflict and inflation concerns, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. But with Vantage Point, you don't have to. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word DEMO to 813813 and discover how to predict stock market trends up to 3 days ahead with incredible accuracy. Whether you trade stocks, options, forex, futures, or crypto, Vantage Point's patented artificial intelligence can give you a massive edge. Text DEMO to 813813 to get what you need to stay ahead of the markets and find big moves before they happen. Don't wait. Text DEMO to 813813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting DEMO, you agree to the terms available at VantagePointSoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and text using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of VantagePoint. Your consent is not a condition of purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So Mark Ali, author of Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, talking about, maybe there's time travelers involved in some of this phenomena. Maybe they're gathering around to see where humankind takes itself. Like that. Did you ever see a movie called Arrival, Mark?
Yes, I did. I did see that. Yeah, as I recall, it's quite an old movie. I know the book is quite an old movie, quite an old book. That's before Close Encounters as well, isn't it? It's quite an early one.
Well, Arrival, the version I'm talking about, it stars Amy Adams as a linguist.
Yes.
And she's called upon to manage
this.
It's
Jodie Foster.
Excuse me?
It's Jodie Foster, isn't it?
No, that's Contact. Arrival is a more recent film. And it depicts this linguist trying to talk to these multi-limbed alien beings called heptapods. Okay? It's a 2016 movie, so it's 6 years ago.
Nah, it's passed me by. I'm not current.
But what it involves is she's trying to communicate with these alien beings who are here to give some kind of message. And it ends up that they use time as a method of talking or communicating.
It's coming back to me now because I remember seeing her. She's in a corridor and the aliens are in a cloudy, almost like a cloudy tank in front of her. And they produce, they're like octopus, they produce ink pictures. And she has to decode the ink pictures. So I think I have seen that movie, yeah.
Again, these beings exist outside of time. Evidently.
Yes. Yes, they do, very much so in that movie. It's an interesting idea. And it's very recent as well. I'd actually forgotten about that movie. That puts the book very firmly in the 21st century line of thought. But yes, they do exist outside time. The thing with the movie that I do recall, though, is that they didn't really major on the fact that they exist outside time. Because obviously it's set in our dimension. So the movie is linear and the beings do appear in set piece parts in the film. And they only tell you that beyond the barrier where they exist, there is no time. But that doesn't really affect the plot, as I recall.
Well, it affects the plot by the conveyance of the message, which covers periods of our time.
Yes. You know, if ever the day comes when somebody can sit down with one of these aliens, in inverted commas, the Greys or whatever, if somebody can sit down and communicate, I think they'd have a handle on our future as well as our past. I think that there has been human beings that have been, you know, capable in past ages of quite accurately foreseeing what's coming. So, you know, if it's there in our makeup, then I would think it may be there in, also in their makeup, but perhaps in exaggerated form.
What bothered me about this movie is if these creatures are so highly advanced, why can't they devise a way to communicate with us without having to go through all this nonsense? It's like we have to go through all this pain to figure out what they want, and if they're so smart, they can tell us. In our language, we learn other languages, so maybe a race that's capable of traveling through the stars, untold decades, hundreds of years, thousands of years ahead of us, they could talk to us in a way that makes sense.
You would have thought so, but that would have spoiled the plot of the film.
Sure, but I'm just saying.
You've got to remember it's only a movie.
They have a universal translator like Star Trek.
Exactly. There's a whole bucket of really difficult topics that way goes if you go down that avenue. You know, why didn't they change something in the past so that we could understand them, or change something in the future, or, you know, why didn't they just, like you say, just write it in plain English or whatever, or, you know, there's so many different little rabbit holes you can go off down.
If you can speak Klingon.
Well, you know, in the movie, that's actually what they were doing. I mean, they knew that sometime in the future, the human race was going to help them in some kind of cataclysmic event. So that's why they appeared when they did, in order to establish that hard part, that communications with humans, knowing that we would be beneficial to them in the future. But you also have to consider, if you're dealing with a race whose existence really is outside of time as we know it, it would be extremely difficult to deal with a species who does live in linear time.
I think you're there into the, you know, the problem with paradoxes and anomalies where, you know, if somebody does have a handle on how time and space works, to what extent are they allowed, are they permitted to interfere with linear time? And that is an enormous issue, absolutely enormous, and a lot of science fiction movies over decades have, you know, struggled with the idea that, well, why don't they just go back in time and change it, you know? Back to the Future is the most famous one, that's all over the place, 1, 2, and 3, all the things they do in those movies. But going back to sort of, if you like, ground rules that the ancients must have understood, the idea of not interfering with time must be an absolute. You know, it's one of those things you just don't do. As soon as you start interfering with time, if you go back and alter something and, you know, change it and it ends up being this, that and that, I think that actually there is built into the universe a sort of fail-safe that prevents that from happening. Either that or, you know, we really need to get an understanding of how that works as part of solving the problem of time travel. So if anybody, you know, has managed to solve the problem of time travel, the next thing they need to solve is what the ground rules are. You know, it's kind of non-intervention, if you like, not being able to change things would have to be a part of that.
You know, we live here at a time where there are sci-fi comic book tropes about traveling through time, and inevitably, and this is the Back to the Future scenario, inevitably you change something in the past. And there's a cascade of events that changes something in the future. So Marty McFly is disappearing rapidly until he gets his parents or parents-to-be to become friendly with one another, to date one another and marry one another. But even then, after fixing the past, he comes back to the present and things are different.
Yes, that is essentially, that would be the paradox that you would have to somehow try to avoid. Otherwise, you could invent a time machine and then go back in time and uninvent it so that it no longer existed and you couldn't time travel anymore. So you'd have to be very careful about what you did in linear time.
Well, in of course, The Time Machine, the H.G. Wells novel, they got away with it because they went to the future. So the time traveler, who, by the way, is not named in the book. I mean, in certain TV shows, he's been H.G. Wells. Or he was named George in the movie with Rod Taylor as the traveler. Yeah. But in the novel, the guy isn't named. But he goes to the future and therefore doesn't have to deal with this time paradox. And it's not an uncommon theory, since we're into it, that UFOs are being piloted by time travelers from the future, but then we have all those complications to deal with. If you change something in the past, does that become part, or is that already part of what the future would be? In other words, you can't change anything in the past you were not meant to change. Or does it open up a new dimension? So reality one is what it was, reality two is what you changed.
I don't quite know how it would work in terms of the multiverse, but certainly time travel, if what I'm suggesting, which is, you know, people in the distant past had somehow managed to solve it, and they were now coming forward to us, that wouldn't create a paradox, because as you say, they're still making leaps in the correct direction in terms of where we're going. So, you know, things like the crash at Roswell or whatever, which happened in our 1940s, if that was a machine from the very distant past coming forward, then it would only affect time from the 1940s onwards. So it's only affecting forward time. And again, if we ended up with, I don't know, some kind of enormous asteroid impact or something like the dinosaur extinction event, then maybe some of these time travelers are thinking at the moment, well, you know, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter if we upset the apple cart or whatever, because what we're doing now is building the foundation for whatever's coming next, for the next phase of the planet's survival, development, and, you know, et cetera. So there are a number of different ways of looking at it, thinking.
You know, we maybe should look at this right now.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead in time a few minutes with Mark, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.